This is the Average Guy Network, and you have found Home Gadget Geeks, show number 262, recorded on May 26th, 2016. Here at Home Gadget Geeks, we cover all the favorite tech gadgets that find their way into news reviews, product updates, and conversation, all for the average tech guy. I'm your host, Jim Carlson, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios. Here in a beautiful but stormy Bellevue, Nebraska, we've had some storms rolling through. Mike, I think we had some tornado warnings earlier in the day. We
sent flood warnings and everything.
We sent everybody home about 4, like, hey, just get home and get off the roads type deal. And nothing really, kind of your run-of-the-mill thunderstorm has rolled through. I don't think we're supposed to get any more tonight, but that is the cost of living here in Nebraska. Of course, we post the show with world-class show notes each week out at theaverageguy.tv. You can also join us on our new mobile app. Head out easy to subscribe to. Big old fat buttons on the page. If you head out there on your mobile device, go to homegadgetgeeks.com. Really, the best way to catch the live show each and every week is right there on that mobile app. It's the easiest one click. Get into it when we are live. And we are live right now on Spreaker. It's there. It's just the easiest way to get it done. So head out to homegadgetgeeks.com. Download. It's absolutely free for both Android and for iPhone. It's really distracting to have myself 16 seconds behind right here. I'm just going to say it. It's really weird. We're live on Blab tonight, too, and so it's weird seeing myself 16 seconds in the past. We're doing some time travel tonight, Mike.
Love it.
Of course, Home Gadget Geeks is a member of the Geeks Network. You can find this show and many other great podcasts out at thegeeksnetwork.com. All right, Mike, you and me tonight, I think we've got some gadgets and some stuff to talk about. First of all, give us an update. How's the leg?
The leg's doing great. So I'm 2 weeks out from getting the one bolt out, and at that point I can kind of go as hard as I want. It's kind of up to me on how fast and hard I want to run on it and stuff like that. Right now I could start putting a little bit more jogging and stuff on it. But the doctor said, hey, if you are getting this thing out and I'm doing it, don't break that bolt between now and then, because that does happen. So I'm taking it easy, just doing some of the light stuff until then, but it's driving me nuts not being able to, like, fully go out and do a run with PD and stuff like that. But other than that, it's doing just great.
Oh, yeah. Take your time. It'll come.
I was able
to
walk across the stage at graduation. That was the goal from the very beginning, and so I was able to do that. And it's all
good. And was that this week or last?
Have 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago. So we saw you last week. We want to thank Emily and James for joining us last week from Classy Little Podcast, a very fun podcast that we did. If you haven't heard it yet, 261, head back to theaverageguy.tv and catch that show. Really fun, lots of fun. I'm getting more and more addicted to their podcast. I really like what they're doing out there.
I love it.
They did Cheers to Scraps, which was kind of fun. We're going to do a little bit of that tonight, too, as we kind of just take a bunch of different tech talk topics. No guest, none of those. We're just going to jam some stuff from our own lives together tonight and work through some tech stuff. Speaking of that, so today's my birthday. And it was kind of fun to celebrate 48 today. I'll say it out loud. It's a little weird to be getting that close to 50. It's funny how people react to that at work. You know, and how old are you? I say 48. Oh, you're just a kid. You know, wow, I didn't feel like a kid.
I was just about to say it. I think that's actually pretty young.
Yeah, I think it is. So, yeah, it's pretty young. In my 40s, you know, I started a podcast. I ran 5 marathons. I've both gained, lost, and gained weight again. Which is always a kind of bummer. I'm back in that kind of up cycle, although I'm still in pretty good shape. We play Ultimate, and I get out and play disc golf, and it's not too bad. But I'd still like to drop a few, you know, use a little technology and drop a few. It's tough to keep up. But because it's my birthday, I wanted to look at a few dates, like what's happened on May 26th. Because, you know, your birthday, Mike, you ever, like, wondered, like, hey, that's that day that sticks out in your mind, like, especially when you're a kid. What else has happened on May 26th? And I wanted to tie it into tech a little bit. So found some cool, 3 really cool, interesting dates of all things that happened on May 26th. May 26th, 1969, Apollo 10 returned to Earth after a successful 8-day test mission. Everything it needed to go to the moon and back was there. The first mission to go all the way to the moon and never land. Now, how much would that suck to be those astronauts, right? on Apollo 10.
Out there, do all the training, do everything you need to, and then just still not be able to touch down.
Yeah, because it's not like Apollo 13, where at least you have a movie made. You know, they did nothing, and at least there was a movie made about them. Right.
Right.
But Apollo 10 gets out there, all the technology, and up, fly around the moon, psych, and then you're coming back. And they tested everything they needed before they put it. What's interesting, I did a little bit of reading about those days. They were really concerned about what would happen when that spacecraft hit the planet. They had no idea. Would it sink into dust? Would it? I mean, they just didn't know. And was watching a documentary. Oh, I don't know, a couple months ago, and they were like literally seconds, like within 20 seconds of running out of fuel when the very first time they landed, from running out of fuel before they touched down. So I mean, it was literally they were coming in. You know, they had to go light on everything, and so it was. While there was lots of redundant systems, they still didn't really know what they were doing. I mean, think about this: 1969. We didn't have computers. Like, they flew to the moon, landed, and came back with really no computers.
Well, yeah. I mean, isn't the joke that those missions were done on computers that were as powerful as our like graphing calculators that we have now? That
maybe
like,
even
fit
less.
The size of our hand, or less than that? Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe even less. It is crazy, and we've never been back since. I think, of course, if we decided for whatever reason we needed to send a person to the moon, I think it'd be a little bit easier.
Yeah.
Today, you know, to get that done, and Mars is all the craze right now. Everybody's kind of talking about getting to Mars. That will not be a mission that they fly somebody all the way to Mars, circle Mars, and then come back. That won't happen. So that happened on this day, 1969. In 1981, the first U.S. patent for computer software was issued. It was called Swift Answer, and the patent took 7 years to issue. And the validity of software patents has been debated ever since. Mike, you're kind of good thinking about kind of, you know, I think you're a lawyer, and we've talked a lot about that, you know, legality and patent trolls. Crazy to think. So it's only been going on since 1981, isn't it?
You would think it would be a lot longer, you know, because you think of patents being like the backbone of like creation in America and stuff like that. So when I saw 1981, I was like, really? That's the first software patent? But it's interesting.
We've only been arguing it since, you know, 1981. I think it's going to get better in that area. I think the U.S. court systems will fix some things so we don't.
Oh, I think it'll definitely get reformed. I think that's going to be a big hot button issue as we go forward.
I think this one here in 1995, and I actually remember this, realizing his company had missed the boat on estimating the impact of the popularity of this new thing they called the internet. Microsoft CEO Bill Gates issues a memo titled, and he would write a book right after this. I'll think of it here in just a second, but Bill Gates issued a memo internally at Microsoft called the Internet Tidal Wave, which signaled the company's focus on the global network. In the memo, Gates declared that the internet was the most important single development since IBM's personal computer, a development that he was assigning the highest level of importance. Still, it's curious, this writer writes, still is curious why it took someone who is regarded as a technology innovator so long to realize that the internet was going to be the real deal. To be fair, like in 1995, when we think about the internet, most consumers really didn't get the internet until about 1997.
Okay.
So 96, 97 were the years, 98 more and more. So to be fair, the internet wasn't what it was. I think we had some early CompuServe and AOL. Those were the early days of the internet. Microsoft didn't see it in that way. Something at the speed of thought. That's what that book was. The book title was. I think I have it at work. Something at the speed of thought. Somebody in the chat room helped me with that. Bill Gates' book. I think he published that 96, 97, I think I want to say. It was a computer renaissance, so maybe 98. He published that. But the whole idea of the book was everything was going to go online. And we just think today that that's like, how could we not see that coming? But if you think about it, like 1994, 93, 94, man, it was still, we were still dial-up modems and things weren't fast. And people were kind of thinking, will this internet thing be a fad or will it really take off? Mike, you were like 5 years old, right?
Yeah. At that point in 95, I was four. So, but I mean, but even as I got older, and I still remember that I don't know how old I was, but the first like cable modem for internet we had, you know, but we didn't have like a wireless access point. It was one cord that came in, so one computer was plugged in, and the coolest thing that you could do was AIM, Instant Messenger, and that's about all I thought the internet was going to be. You never thought of it. I didn't use it for any school papers. I didn't use it for research or anything like that. It was just like a fun little thing. I had no idea really, you know, what was this going to be. So yeah, I don't blame him either for being late to the party on realizing how big it was going to be.
Well, he has that thought in 95, certainly a little bit earlier than that. I think so Tony got the book for me, Business at the Speed of Thought, Using a Digital Nervous System. And in the book is really about how Microsoft took everything electronic. So, and Tony, if you could look up the date for me, I think that's 90. I want to say that's 98. That was written in 98. And he really sets forth this whole idea of a company going completely digital for everything. And Microsoft was an early adopter of that. There were a lot of companies that weren't doing that or weren't thinking about all documentation, all processes going digital. The SharePoint comes out of that era. Yeah, 1999. So 4 years later, says Tony. So thank you for looking that up. And so Microsoft really then began to lead this idea of getting everything digital, and it would take years. In fact, we're still probably struggling with it, to be honest with you. But an interesting day nonetheless. And so in 95, just weird to think that on this day in 1995, Microsoft, who we now, you know, we would never, if you just came on the scene, you wouldn't think. But they weren't thinking along those lines. They were thinking about operating systems and Office.
Yeah.
That's kind of, in that day, I mean, think about it. Office 95 was a big deal. That was their first really big launch of the Office suite. Word and Excel had been out, and there were some other things that were come with it. Access would come with it eventually. The world's worst database ever designed or developed would come out with Microsoft Access. And so, some interesting times, but weird to think now in 2016, here you and me, we're just across town.
Right.
But the other night, on Sunday night, I did a podcast with somebody in Delhi, New Delhi, someone in Dubai, and I was in Omaha, and it's like, it was just like this, like no different than what you and I are doing right now. I mean, our kids will have no, well, your kids will have no idea of days. I mean, it's just amazing the world they're coming into and how cool it'll be.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, that's the crazy part. Like, I consider myself lucky to be one of the last generations to really have gone from no internet to internet, you know, no technology really in terms of computers and personal devices and stuff like that. Windows 95 was actually my first operating system that I ever messed around with on my dad's work computer. But yeah, it's a total change. Insane.
It's crazy. Ironically, 95 was one of the first ones for me. I did a little Windows 3.1. In those days, but 95 was really the first one, and this would have been in the mid-90s, you know, 95, 96, I think. It would probably have been 96 before I really got a computer. I think I got my first 386 computer in around that era. It would have been 94 maybe when I first got it, had Windows 3.1. So certainly, man, PCs were way harder back then, and not everybody had them, and you were super cool if you did, but they were kind of coming on, and the golden era of the PC. Well, that was then, this is now. Mike, you've been busy with school graduations and all those things, but you've also been doing some vlogging. And,
yeah.
How's that going? First of all, if folks wanted to catch up with you on vlogging, where would they go to do that? What's the best place to find you?
So I actually took your advice on about.me. So MikeWieger.com, if you guys head over to MikeWieger.com, you can find, it has the link to my YouTube page, because YouTube is really my main place right now. That's where I'm posting all of the content, but to make it easy, MikeWieger.com. So if you head over there, that's where you can find it. But yeah, so I was stuck in this, like, I still want to be a content creator. I can't stick to a schedule with podcasting, though. I didn't really know what to do, so I was like, well, I'm walking around, I might as well put a camera in front of my face while I do it. So I had grabbed the GoPro and started to just vlog, you know, do daily stuff that I like to do. And it was also inspired by, I mean, I'm sure you guys have heard about Casey Neistat. He's just kind of blowing up. He's becoming kind of a big celebrity, and his claim to fame is YouTube, and he is a vlogger. And that's how he had the Neistat Brothers on HBO, which was a show a few years ago, and then now he vlogs. So he was kind of an inspiration for doing that. But as far as gadgets go, so vlogging has been a blast. I've been really, really enjoying it. It's been a lot of fun. And I think it'll be cool. Hannah and I, the way I got Hannah on board was, hey, won't it be fun for our kids to see how nerdy we were and weird we were back when we were pregnant with our first one? So So this is the setup I use. This is the GoPro. It's actually a few years old. This is a Hero 3 Silver Edition, so a few years old. But I got this custom housing. It's not really custom, but it's different than any other housing you would get. Not waterproof or anything like that, but it has the shoe mount, which is what I was looking for, because I got this microphone that you would usually put on a DSLR microphone or on a DSLR camera, and I plugged in the GoPro because the microphone on these things is not that great. It's super quiet. It's not, I mean, these things are not meant to record audio. They're meant to record action video. So when you plug this in, though, you get professional sounding audio and a pretty good picture all in one, and on a very tiny, compact little setup there. And these bendy tripods by Joby, I have to say, are the best, because this is how I hold it all day, put them all together. And then if you ever want to expand them out, you can bend them up. Yes, perfect. Yeah,
I bought one, too. This is like a Target version of it. So
okay.
Whatever, Target. No, they have a brand name.
Something Farms, isn't it?
Like, who knows? It's different. But it's the same thing. I paid $20 for it.
So, right.
So
yep.
Pretty good. Yeah.
Same sort of thing. Love these. And it's perfect for vlogging. And actually, you can pop this off and I can put a full-blown camera on there if I want. So,
hold on. Don't put that away yet. I got a couple questions for you.
Yeah.
So the Rode mic, because that's...
Yes, that's what I was going to... I was going to try and see if I can pull it off here.
Oh, okay. Yeah, pull that off. What kind of mic is that? Is it a shotgun mic?
It is a shotgun mic. Okay. And it is a... Oh, shoot. Now I'm wondering if... I think it's a condenser mic. Pretty sure. Okay.
But do you know the model number on that thing? It's a Rode...
Rode VideoMic Go. So Rode makes two VideoMic series. I think actually three. There's the Rode VideoMic Standard, the Rode VideoMic Pro, and then the Rode VideoMic Go. So the reason I chose this one, if you notice, it's just a single... It's super small, first of all. Pretty short. It's got this little shock absorber thing, the red part there, and then this cord. It's not battery powered. So when I was looking at all the different options, there's pros and cons to having a powered mic and a non-powered mic. The pro being the sound is much better. If you have a powered microphone, it really does a great job of only getting, you know, that single cone from a shotgun mic. So if you're vlogging, it's much better. Sounds a lot clearer. This one's not powered, so the downside is it picks up a lot of noise. So it will pick up everything, which is not too bad actually when you're vlogging. It's not terrible. It does pick us up pretty good. Isolates us okay, but not as good as a powered mic. But the upside to having a non-powered mic, and the reason I chose it was because there are so many times that you will forget. You have to turn on the microphone. It's like you don't just turn on the camera. If you have a powered mic, you got to turn on both. And if you don't, you have no audio. Because all the cameras, if you have a microphone plugged in, they're not recording. They're not doing like any backup with the internal microphone. It just turns off the internal. So I didn't want to miss any audio. And I thought this is good enough for a vlog. If I was doing any professional work, I'd probably go with the VideoMic Pro. But this was good enough. So this one was $100. So around $100.
$96.90 on Amazon right now. If you use the Amazon affiliate link, go to theaverageguy.tv/Amazon. Okay.
Okay. Side story though. You the perfect way to bring it up. Interesting, because I had an Amazon gift card, so of course I was going to go buy this on Amazon because I had saved up all my gift cards. But right before I did that, I went over to Rode.com just to look at all their different other products, and they have a huge announcement banner on the top of their website that says, "Do not order from Amazon. We've been having problems with if it's fulfilled by Amazon, people selling counterfeit Rode products." So I got extremely lucky. I still order through Amazon, and I think it's probably corrected. If you buy the one that says sold by Rode, not fulfilled by Amazon, just sold by Rode, I think you're good to go. But okay. A word of warning, you could run the possibility. And in the reviews of the product on Amazon, that was a big complaint. It's not working. It was dead on arrival, all this stuff, and I think a lot of them were counterfeit. But
I heard about that on another podcast.
So, and I think it might still be a problem, but mine came and it was perfect. Rode branded and everything like that. So this is $100 or $96.97. And then if you bump up to that pro model, it's going to run you about double. It's going to be about $200. So
I do see a Rode VideoMic shotgun. So that's a super cardio. One you have, right? And I don't know what that means. But then they have a Rode VideoMic shotgun microphone. With that same kind of mount. Looks a little bit different. $150 right now on Prime.
Is that the one with the big rectangle in the back?
It is.
I think that one's powered as well.
Okay.
So that's what that one is. They're great mics, though. I have to say, I was super impressed with the quality. I'm sure if you guys are fans of the show, you saw I posted in the Facebook group a comparison of just the internal GoPro mic compared to plugging one of these in, and well worth the $100. Yeah, it adds a lot to the GoPro, and most people aren't using a GoPro for the reason I am. You know, right? Most people don't need a microphone on their GoPro, but for me, And if you do need
but
one,
but a handy mic to put on and have on a camera. Can will that thing? Can you plug that into like an iPhone or Android and have,
yeah,
also have it?
You
be
have
a
to get a TTR. You know those that cord that converts it because the phones have the three rings.
TTR or TRS.
Yeah, tip ring sleeve or TRRS for tip ring sleeve. You need to get the converter. So
$15 if you want to get that converter.
Right, but. Yeah. The reason I got this, because, yes, it goes to the iPhone, which I've tried out. It works perfectly. And then also, so this is our brand new, this is Hannah's new camera, which I've also tried using for vlogging. It's a little bit heavy. But
it'll mount onto your tripod,
yeah.
Right?
Yep, yeah. I've done it, yeah. I did a few shots yesterday.
Right.
And if I didn't want to worry about dropping Hannah's new camera, right. I would probably use it because it's just crystal clear. It's perfect. But, I mean, a very versatile mic. You can put this thing on anything. You could really use it. I've actually seen YouTube videos of people who stick this in someone's face as an interview microphone. Gets the job done. I mean, it's not that great, not that professional looking, but it gets the job done. So I was really surprised, actually. I was not expecting great things out of a $100 Go mic, one that's portable. Usually those things are pretty cheap and not that great, but Rode always makes good products. I will have to say, though, the build quality, if that's what you're into, it's decent. It's all plastic. There's not a single piece of metal on this microphone, so pure plastic. But also, it's not that bad because it's really lightweight. So if you're dropping this microphone, I've dropped it a few times on concrete, it's not going to hurt it as much because there's no weight. It falls really softly to the ground, so it's not that bad. And you can get a bunch of windscreen covers and stuff like that for it
too. And they range $30 to $40 for the windscreen covers. Mike, you've kind of opened. I saw you, talking about this, and I'm kind of, I watched a little bit of what you did. I'm like, ooh, that's kind of interesting. The pro kit, like you're talking about, is shotgun, so it's got that defined field for $199. So you got three different choices. The $99 version you have,
which is not shotgun, right?
Yeah, no, it's not. It's
not,
super cardio.
Yes. It's the style of a shotgun. It looks like one, but it's not actual shotgun. Yes.
But you've done it. It works. It's good enough for what you're doing, right? Yeah. If you want to step up and get a shotgun mic in the mid-range, it's $149. And then they have their pro version of it, VPM shotgun microphone, $199. So you can do 100 to 200, kind of get the various. I like that because I just think oftentimes when we're doing that kind of camera work, the sound is the hardest part to get.
And it totally
is. So throwing $150 or $200 microphone on top to get that quality, and if you can shotgun it in, you can get a ways away and be able to pick up those vocals. Is there a way to monitor that sound that's coming off?
Not on the GoPro.
Okay.
But on the DSLRs, yeah, I mean, that's got all of the settings. That's why I really like planning out that new Nikon. So I'll just mention real quick while we're talking. This is the new Nikon D3300. One thing I was shocked at was, so Hannah's mom is a photographer. She's been a photographer for a long time. And we were talking about prices, and we were shocked how affordable these things are now. So this is kind of Nikon's entry-level DSLR. There's a few different models, but this is their entry level, probably their lowest end model, but only $399, which for me when I was thinking DSLRs, I thought we were at least going to be spending $700 to $800 to $1,000 on a nice DSLR. $399 for this camera, 24 megapixel, I mean, just fantastic as far as aperture and everything like that. I've been really impressed with the camera so far. And in the same exact build quality as some of their higher ends, it doesn't have, like, I was looking at all the features. It doesn't have Wi-Fi. It doesn't have a flip-out screen. And some of the other things, like, you can get higher shutter speed and stuff like that.
Does it have HDMI out? Can you run it?
It does have HDMI out. Yeah. So it has HDMI out. You could do live feeding out to something else. So I've thought about that. If I had an HDMI input or some box to do that on my computer, I could run it during the live show.
But, yeah, no, you could use that. I've got a splitter at work but I've got an HDMI converter that converts it to USB 3. Install a little bit of software. It installs the drivers. Google Hangouts would pick it up, and you could use your DSLR as a camera.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I know Mike in the chat room, he probably knows a lot more about these, but just for me, on my entry-level knowledge of this, I was just impressed that they can be, you could get a $399 camera, and it's actually pretty decent. I was actually pretty impressed with it. So,
well, I'll have to get that converter over, or the, that video over to you, and we'll have to test it out.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, so with audio, though, I think one of the main things, like you were saying, was when you can put this sort of mic on top of any sort of video rig, especially if you are outside. So this is my biggest reason for wanting to get it. I was editing video, and I was trying to convince Hannah that we needed this, right? She was already just getting into vlogging. I'm like, okay, now we need this this microphone. So trying to convince her, and I was editing, and the wind noise would just wipe out any sort of audio. If we were outside at all and there was the slightest wind, you couldn't hear what we were saying. So even the cheap Video Mic Go, so the cheaper end, the one that I have, isolates that and takes out a lot of the wind noise. And even if you can hear the wind in whatever the recording was, you still hear our voices crystal clear. So my last vlog, if you guys want a kind of an example of being outside, I spent a lot of time outside in my last vlog, the one about the coffee shops. And I was out on the pedestrian bridge, actually right by Jim's office. I was taking some photos of Gallup over there. And there was a ton of wind that day, and you can still hear me clear as day. And I was also surprised that the audio being brought into the GoPro is as good as it is when you're using an external microphone. You also, I should mention, if you are doing the GoPro way, you need this little adapter. So this plugs into the USB port on the side of the GoPro, just a little mini USB, and then it's just the audio jack, whatever that is. Yep. And but go with the GoPro brand. It's expensive. I know. That was the hardest part for me. It was $15 for just this tiny little cord.
What are they, made by Apple?
Exactly. That's. I felt like I was buying an Apple cord. I did. I felt like I was buying an Apple cord.
It's not white.
Right, exactly. But apparently, if off-brand ones have issues with crackling and noise or not even working at all, so just probably worth the pain and suffering of just paying the $15.
Buy the real one.
Buy the real one. On something like that, buy the real one.
When it's that inexpensive. GoPros are running from $300 to $500, I think, right, when we think about the various versions. So your Nikon at $399 is in the same price point as a current GoPro, right?
I was just having that conversation with someone else. Someone else was asking me, hey, you know, what GoPro do you have? You know, what do you think I should do? I'm kind of getting this. And I was like, well, to be honest with you, it's kind of a hard decision because you could, like you just said, go get a DSLR, a nice Nikon branded one, Canon, whatever you're into, for that price range. But the one thing I was suggesting also was try and look back and try and find an older model. A lot of people don't need all the new specs of video and stuff like that that the Hero 4s have. So this camera was, you can probably get this now for super cheap. I mean, I'm guessing you could get the Hero 3 Silver for maybe like $120. And it does 1080p at 30 frames a second, which is, I think, as good as most people need. A lot of people aren't even editing these and putting them out. They're just getting the footage to have for later. When you're getting into the other, you're getting, you know, 60 frames for 1080p, you're getting into 4K, you're getting into some other features. But these old ones are still, I think, just as good. I wouldn't go any older than the Hero 3. The Hero 3 has Wi-Fi, which is actually a great feature on the GoPro, so you can connect it to your phone and you can view the clips. You can also use it as a remote and stuff like that. So the Wi-Fi I actually do use quite a bit.
Does it stream? Does it have HDMI out?
It does have HDMI out. I haven't tested it. It's one of those awkward, like little really tiny HDMIs.
No, we'll get you. I'll get you that converter. I'll let you guys test that. You can do both the GoPro 1 week.
Maybe, oh, there we go.
DLSR the next week, and we can kind of compare the video. Of course, it won't matter if your bandwidth's not any good. So, you know, that's another consideration. You can have all the great cameras in the world, right, but if you're trying to upload and your bandwidth's not very good, it's not going to matter. But that'll be kind of fun. Well, those are two pretty cool gadgets. I mean, that's an interesting comparison between the two. Of course, the GoPro is going to be way more durable when you're thinking about adventure sports, or right? Those could clip it onto a helmet or onto a vehicle or onto a bike. Or I know Mike Howard has bought the suction cup or some of those kind of mounts so you can put it on your car, you know, and those kinds of things. So very versatile. You wouldn't do that to your camera, obviously. That's not
right
for that. But you're going to get way more options from an exposure standpoint and a glass. I think that's what they call it, right? The glass when you purchase the lenses.
Right.
For it, I've listened to JPEG Dural like once, and I sound like I'm trying to sound like a photographer. The glass.
Right. Well, and you know, so someone asked me which one's more versatile, and at first I said the GoPro just out of kind of habit. I said, oh, the GoPro, you could do stuff like I'm doing a vlog, or you could do action sports. And then I thought, no, that's not true, because this DSLR, I can do any sort of video, any sort of photography. I can do a lot more with the DSLR, but you know, this is way lighter, and I've dropped this a million times, and it's not going to break. There's just no breaking these things. So.
Super durable.
Oh, super durable.
Super durable.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially if you've got a good case for it as well. All right, some interesting stuff. We'll follow up on some of those that we talked about with it. But interesting, I think, if you're interested in watching the vlogs and how Mike's doing that, head over to his site and watch a few of those. That would be an interesting with some of the when I think about some of the conference video that I do, I should look at maybe trying to borrow that from you and test it in a room with a bunch of people. And although that's not necessarily a shotgun mic, so we couldn't test the, you know, the beauty of a shotgun mic is you can point it at somebody.
Right.
And it will pick up that sound. And isolate the noise around you. So interesting. I might have to pick up one of those microphones.
Yeah, they are awesome and very versatile.
MikeWieger.com gets it there. Well, Mike, on my birthday, I've been looking at gadgets that I'd like to have. It's one of those kinds of things. My mower, you know, I'm a self-admitted tree hugger, just a little bit, right?
And I have that surprises me. I actually did not know that about you, so.
Yeah, I'm kind of a tree hugger in some regards. Not for everything. You know, we recycle pretty soundly, and I'm not a tree hugger is I run all these computers, and I'm just burning the rainforest down, right? But I try to do, environmentally friendly things. And so, you know, a gas mower that most Americans have to mow their front lawn spews out more emissions in one running than the average car does in a month. That's how bad these four-cycle engines that you're using for your lawnmower, they're just terrible for the environment. They just spew out. Most people never get them tuned up, or they don't, and they're loud. And
right.
So a couple years back, I went to a battery, in those days, and I thought it was a Black & Decker, one of those battery, big. And I thought it was going to be one of those cool ones. Really, it's just a car battery or two small engine batteries that are in there. Plugged in serial or something like that. And I've already gone through one battery, and now the second battery that I put in there is starting to go. And so I can really only mow about a third of my lawn at a time. You mow a third, you put it away. So when I'm like mowing every day, like,
okay.
Go out, mow a third.
As long as the front's mowed right, you're all good.
Yeah, the good news is I got Zoysia up front, which is just carpet. I mean, it's just green carpet grass, and it grows pretty slow, and it's super soft. And so I can get away with the front lawn. The back is the regular fescue, variety of lawn that grows super fast. Well, it's raining in Nebraska right now, and sunny and raining, which means the grass is growing at an alarming rate, right? I mean, it's one of those things where I just can't keep up. And we have deer that come through. We're in this path with the deer, of course, where their food exits their body and lands on my lawn. Those spots now, the grass is seriously like double height that it is everywhere else. It's crazy. I mean, it's great for the lawn. But that being said, that mower was starting to go, and so I've been looking at mowers, and so I popped onto Amazon the other day, and I saw a robo-mower, and I thought, what would be more perfect for the gadget guy than a robo-mower? So the one I was looking at originally is a Warix, I think that's how you pronounce it, W-O-R-X, Warix. There's a variety of different ones, and I had no idea they were making this many kinds of robo-mowers that are out there. So there's one from Robo-Mow. John Deere, of course, makes their own Robo-Mower. Honda makes one called the Mimo. I think that's how you pronounce it, M-I-I-M-O. There's this Steiga, S-T-I-G-A. And then you'll have to pronounce that other one.
Husqvarna. Yeah, but I had no idea there were this many models either. I had no idea all these people were jumping into the Robo-Mow game.
Yeah, like, nobody's talking about it, right?
No, they're not. I live in an apartment complex, so no one around here is talking about it.
Well, the reason they're not talking about it is because they're freaking expensive. Like, so the bottom-end ones, $900, or let's just call it $1,000, right? $1,000 to $1,500. I mean, you get a pretty nice riding mower for, like, $1,500.
Right.
You know? But all of them have as I've looked at them, all of them battery operated, all of them have a station that they plug into, all of them now have quick charging. So they'll mow for an hour or two on a single charge. They'll recharge within 45 minutes. So pretty good turnover from that. Most of them are somewhere between 7 and 15 inches. So not gigantic when you think about it. And then there's two kind of different styles of blades. One have fixed blades that would think like the ones you have in your gas-powered mower today, right? A fixed blade. In most cases on the big mowers, it's just one single blade. Some of these had quads in there, the blades. There would be four things. I saw one that had two different 7-inch blades, so they were circles like next to each other, and they were just 7-inch fixed blades in there. I saw one that was more like it was a round circle, and it had razor blades that came off each side. And when you turned on the mower, the centrifugal force would pop those blades out, and then when the mower stopped, those things would come back in. Right, so it was a safety feature.
Okay.
Or if it ran into something, those blades would pull back in. From that standpoint, so a huge variety when we think about robo mowers, a huge variety in blade technologies, and even the way you could lower or raise them. Some of them would have electronic features that would lower or raise the blade. some of them very manual. One even had like an Allen wrench. And I was like, oh, you can't build something this high tech and have an Allen wrench that's an adjustment. And literally, you would loosen it up, lift the thing up, and then tighten it back up. Oh,
yeah.
Not for $1,000.
I might as well be out there mowing my own lawn. Jeez.
Yeah, not for $1,000. The idea, though, is that, and then most of them, I think all of them, have a perimeter. So you bury, either you bury it in the ground or you put it at the grass level and the grass grows over it. In the mower, and it's really, they're all really random. You don't remember this, but in the 80s we had these robo toys that you could sit down and on the top of them you could program them to go, you know, go 4 feet this way and then turn left and then go 2 feet and turn right and then spin around. Yeah, even in the 80s we had this, and you would program it and then go, and then it would, I forget what that's called. Somebody in the chat room remind me of what that, it was like a tank thing, and I forget what it's called right now. Somebody in the chat room will pick us up here in just a second. So this is not that. So this is the mower literally coming out of the base, turning, and then going. And it runs into something, and it turns right, and it goes. And it runs into something, and it turns right, and it goes. Literally, it's NASCAR. It just keeps, although NASCAR, is NASCAR left? Is it a left turn on NASCAR?
I think NASCAR's left.
So it's, and they just, and what they do is in the random motion, and they keep it on the lawn long enough, it's eventually going to hit all the grass. And the idea is that you mow every day.
Okay.
And it doesn't have to cut the grass as much, but it's out there for 5 or 6 hours during the day. It recharges a couple times, and it mows, and it goes around. And eventually, it's like if you get enough monkeys in a room full of typewriters typing, eventually they'll type War and Peace. That's the idea, is that eventually they will get the lawn mowed. And so I saw some simulations and some things of that, and I think in most cases it probably works. But it is, your mower is out there. I mean, the idea, it's out there every day, cutting parts of the lawn, putting itself back away, charging, doing it again. And I imagine there's a time period or whatever you say, you know, mow between these hours or some of those.
And what about like weather? Does it say anything about like if it's raining, does it still?
Yeah, because that's why I would have thought, you know, you would maybe tie that into the National Weather Service, and if it's going to rain that day, you don't. Although one advertised wet or dry, doesn't matter. It mows just equally as well. Wet or dry. You know, the idea, we always think, man, if it's wet, that grass is going to get all jammed up. Well, if it's wet, but it's short, and you're cutting little bits every single day, it doesn't really matter, right?
Right, that's true.
You know, from that standpoint. So
this looks pretty cool.
Pretty interesting, yeah.
And now it looks really nice, actually. The Husqvarna one looks...
Yeah, that was in the video I saw, the Husqvarna was the one that passed all the right tests. It handled, you know, so some of the problems you have to think about. A mower coming downhill and then hitting a fence, in the sense that metal, you know, the metal fence, well, it tells it to turn. In some of them, the momentum would carry that right on through into the, you know, right past the hill. Well, of course, if those are your flowers,
yeah, right.
You just mowed your flowers over, right? That Husqvarna would stop. There are situations when you think about when you're right up on a hill, like if the pattern gets you up on the hill, the natural tendency is to pull that mower down, right? You're not going to get a straight line. Not all of them compensate for hills. And then there's varying degrees, like some go from a 20% incline to a 40% incline. They kind of vary in that. I think if your lawn, I've got out front here on our front lawn, not only do I have Zoysia, but it's pretty steep. I mean, it's a good, I'm not sure it could do it up front. I would just do it in the back because that's probably the best place to get it done. So, yeah, that was one of those things that, you know, you think about, like, man, robots have made their way to the backyard. I'll be honest, in my yard, I'd be a little skeptical. Like, for a grand, that's just to get into it.
Right.
I'd be a little skeptical.
Well, and, you know, we were talking, like, what happens when the neighbor kid hits his ball over, comes and that thing takes off a toe or something, or Kevin says, what happens when it hits the family cat? You know, it's just, there's a lot of things that could go wrong, which I'm sure they have. I mean, if
they do have safeties.
They have safety features built.
No, it's all very safety. They showed some things where, although it ran over some plastic toys, and some of those just got demolished in the process, some of them. Yeah. Because of the blade technology, they didn't damage it as much, but it still damaged it, so to speak. So, you know, you have those things, obstructions. In my yard, we have a linden tree that's just, I think it drops more branches than it has. I don't know how it physically can still be even there with as many branches as it drops every storm. I go out there and the ground is just full branches. I'm like, where do these come? They're like magic. They just appear. They're like magic. So that's one of those things where I would have to make sure, I'd have to be really, really vigilant to make sure those sticks were picked up off the, and it would go over them.
Right.
But it would still, you know, I've gotten some, usually they're pretty small, about that big. But sometimes, big storm, I'll get some, maybe 3/4 to an inch size.
You would worry about almost damaging the blades. Because, you know,
yeah,
a thing being
or
a thousand
flipping
dollars
the thing over or, right. You know. And then in some of the tests, they talked about sometimes they get stuck. They go into things and they get stuck and you have to go out and manually kind of restart them. And some of them were more prone, up to 4 times in a 24-hour period, you'd have to go out and kind of restart it. Well, you don't want to be babysitting your robo-mower.
No.
Like, hey, honey, I'm going to go check on the mower. Like, that's not something, you know, hey, is the mower running? Did you see the mower running? Now, some of them, the decibel levels, they've gotten as quiet as about 50, which is pretty darn quiet when you think about the highest ones are in the 90s, 96. They're pretty loud. They've advertised these as being to run at night. So that wouldn't be another thing where, you know, at 8 o'clock at night, you start mowing your lawn, and it does it all night long.
Right. It's got to be quiet.
Puts it away. Yeah, puts it away. You know, so maybe it mows it 2 or 3 times. It gets 2 or 3 times on a run overnight and then goes away. And then during the day, it's not even out. I would be, honestly, I'd be afraid somebody come by and swiping it if it was in the front yard. You know,
that's
you're
really
gone.
True. Yeah. What's to stop
you know, what's to stop somebody from swiping it?
The spinning blades on the bottom.
Well, most of them, when you pick it up, they stop immediately.
Gotcha.
They have a...
I wonder, so did they show in the test, like, okay, if you have an area that goes from, like, grass to maybe mulch or rock or something like that where a... flower bed, like you said, or trees, does it stop when it senses a different...
No. If it's in its boundaries, if it thinks it's in its boundary, it just keeps going. Now, some of them don't handle it very well. Some of them just rolled right over the top of it, you know, and so some of them got stuck in those situations. So
I wonder if you could get creative, though, with, like, running a wire literally around most of that stuff.
Oh,
you
know, sure.
Wiring up everything and your...
Yeah, I think you
would.
Can. Yeah. Give you about, I don't know, it's like 3,000 feet or something of wire.
Okay.
And you can run these stakes that you put in the ground and really just lay it on the ground. And I think then you have to charge the wire or something so that it knows it's there. And then it gets up to it, senses it. It's got little sensors in the nose that say, hey, I'm reaching the wire. And it'll stop back and make a left turn or right turn, whichever, and then keep on going. And so pretty interesting, Mike. I'm not going to lie. I don't think I'm going to do it. I started looking at mowers, and I was like, do I really want to spend $1,000 on a mower? And that's like the cheap entry-level grand.
Right.
That's like, okay, do I want to buy a Mac or do I want to buy a PC? So I'm going to go PC, and I'm going to get a $240 gas mower that just mows the lawn.
And just have to put up with an inferior product. You know.
Exactly. It's going to last... You know, it's going to have to be rebooted a couple times, and it will get viruses. And yeah. You know.
But, you know, this is one of those things where you would think, naturally, that prices are going to come down. And I'm sure they will come down. But it's also one of those devices where I don't think it's going to get popular enough where enough people are buying them to allow them to lower their prices.
Yeah.
So I don't think this is going to come down as fast as maybe we see some other technologies. Like I said, I was mentioning to you the boosted board, an electronic hover or electronic longboard. Those, I think the prices are going to come down because these things are selling like hotcakes. They are $1,000 for a longboard, which is crazy. But they're selling enough that I think eventually they'll get down into the, you know, threes, 300 or something like
right.
that. That's what you hope from this, is that in a few years you're good to go.
Yeah.
In your new house, you know, whenever you're going to move.
Yeah, I think we may see these come down. I think you could get to a day where there may be 500, 300 to 500. And, you know, they're all battery operated. One of the drawbacks in having this battery mower, you know, batteries just don't last that long.
Right.
And, you know, you think about a mower, you think about a gas-powered mower, you're going to get a good 10 years probably out of that if you take care of it. Maybe more. Battery, 3 to 5 in most cases before those batteries start going bad. Now, some of the new technology that's going, I went out, looked at new mowers. By the way, battery, way more expensive than a gas mower right now. So
really?
Yeah, like.
And how much are the batteries for those? Like when you were saying that you had to replace your battery, are those expensive as well?
They're expensive as well, right? Okay. To get that, to get the big batteries, to get the you know, the amps is what matters in a lot of those things. So, you know, to get the bigger batteries, of course, it costs more. And so, like, some of those start at like $500. You get a pretty nice gas powered, you know, it'll have all kinds of adjustments. It'll auto start. It'll, you know, it's got powered wheels. You go with the battery, man, it's expensive. And you're going to replace those batteries probably in 3 to 5 years.
Right.
So, and then they're changing so fast. I'm always worried, like, am I going to be able to find that battery? Because now the big deal is to have these custom molded batteries that you just slide in and close the lid, right? Not the car batteries like I have in my current one. And I'd just be worried I couldn't find that. You know, take your drill, like today. Take your average power drill and go try and go find a replacement battery for it.
Right.
It's impossible because they all change their battery styles like every 2 years. It's worse
than... They do
than
it on purpose. I know. I mean, that's on purpose. So you buy the whole new product again. Battery prices, this battery right here, I just bought it, $47 for a single... This is a second Nikon battery.
A second one for the camera.
Yeah, which I was been surprised. They last a really long time. Like, I still haven't charged this thing back up since we bought it. But but still, $47 for one battery this size. I was shocked how much that was.
Well, and I just said volts. I mean, I just said amps, but it's really the volts they go by when you sell these things. So the ones we were talking about, generally in the 28-volt range, I saw some mowers that had up to 40 volts available on them. They go a little bit longer. You know, they have two batteries instead of just one. $600 to get that, and I'm thinking I'm looking at, like, it's $240. I'm kind of hoping it's at Home Depot. I'm kind of hoping it'll go on sale. I keep watching it through the app. Have you seen the Home Depot app, by the way?
No, I have not.
Oh, okay. So let's just talk about it real quick.
But you're talking to me at the perfect time as we're house hunting. Like, I'm gonna need a mower in the next probably 3 months. I mean, all this stuff.
Yeah. So go out to the Home Depot app. Right there it is, right there, and it pops in, and then hey, look at that, Memorial Day savings, right, going on right now. And then for me, like, I just put this mower in a list. So the one I'm looking at, I found in the store, and then I actually just scanned it in with my phone and said, put it in a list, right? And in that list, then it gives me some information about it, including a video that's out there for the ratings. This one I'm looking at in particular. So it's $239 right now, regular price. And I'm kind of hoping it'll go on sale for like $209 or maybe even $199. That would be ideal, like during this weekend coming up here, they'd put it on sale for like $199. So I just keep checking it. It tells you, gives you some information. The cool thing, it tells you how many are available at the store that's closest to you. So I kind of watched that and been like, ooh, they got three over there. So before I go driving out to go pick it up, I could order it right from the app, of course, if I wanted to. They have it ready for
me. And they'll price match too. So if you find it, you could always just show them, hey.
Yeah, but I looked at Lowe's and Menards. They're all different. No, they're all different mowers. It's super hard to price match. You know, when they all have their different off-brand, that's kind of the thing that...
there is a pro version. Is that the pro version, or is it the
no, that's the right... Man, I am slacking. I don't have that.
Who knows? What are you going to spend to be a pro member at a Home Depot?
Like $1 million. Yeah, you have to be an Apple guy. You have to be willing to pay Apple prices.
Yeah.
So you... So pretty
I'm
cool.
Right
you
now.
Can, you can go in there, and they ship ads to you, too. So you can just let the ads roll through if you want. I think I could probably invoke them if I wanted to. Let's see if I can. Yeah. So, Mike, interesting. You know, we think about mowers going to this kind of robo-mower technology. I'm going to watch. I don't know how much longer I can mow my lawn a third at a time. You know, I get out for like 20 minutes. And it's really nice because I get out there, and I haven't even broken a sweat yet, and the mower's already done.
You know?
And you're like, sometimes that's not too bad. Sometimes it's horrible. So I may be, but that's what I kind of landed on. Like, well, I'm going to go gas. This one has got a pretty good engine. I don't need all the bells and whistles. I don't want the drive. I don't want all that stuff to go wrong.
Right.
Know? It's a mower. It's a mower.
We got to remember that about a lot of things these days. It is a insert product here. Like, yeah. You don't need everything.
It's just a mower. And
even
so
cars nowadays, it's a car. It gets me from point A to point B. It doesn't need to massage my butt while I go, like, while I do it, you know.
Yeah, but I said this story the other day. I went to my dentist, and I sat down in the chair. It's a massaging chair at the dentist.
Okay, that'd be nice.
Yeah, I thought that was a good use of technology.
Yeah, that's pretty true.
He's on the ceiling. Good idea, right?
Laughing gas, a TV, and a massager, I think I would have a fantastic time with the dentist.
It'd be awesome. Now, if they just you could just pour yourself a little rum and Coke while you're in there.
There you go. Anthony says, Alexa, mow the yard.
Well, hey, right?
Yep.
If talk to the mower and
that Husqvarna has an app, I'm sure, you know, and they connect it into smart home and stuff. And yeah.
No, very cool. So I've been thinking about it. I don't know. I don't think I'm going to pull the trigger. We've got some not on the $1,000 robo mower anyway, so that's not going to happen. We got something from the mailbag. This is actually a couple weeks old. So Robert Davis, Robert, as a listener, thanks for writing this in. I mentioned 2 or 3 weeks ago I got hacked through TeamViewer. By the way, if you're a TeamViewer user, you should invoke dual-factor authentication right now. I know many of us set TeamViewer up on all
our PCs. I did not hear this. Okay.
Oh, yeah, this is the week you were out.
The week I was out.
Shauna was here. Yeah, this is the week we had Shauna. It's the week people got angry because we didn't talk about gadgets. Sorry about that. So Shauna was a great interview, so it was totally worth it. But So they apparently came in through they got my username and password. I don't know how they got that, although my password probably wasn't as robust as it needed to be on TeamViewer, and I did not have dual factor on it. And of course, a lot of us tech guys leave TeamViewer on, just like you set it up on all our PCs, and we can get from any PC to any PC, and that's never worry about that. Yeah, right, boom. Well, they, through the outside, it's installed it, got access to it, came in, and when I came in on a Sunday morning, I had the, you know, if you use TeamViewer, when you're done, you know, it puts a little splash screen that says, hey, thanks for using TeamViewer. And I thought, oh, wait a minute. I haven't used TeamViewer in 24 hours or a week. Something's wrong here. And so I started digging in, and sure enough, they had gotten access to my desktop here. And, of course, I use LastPass, so a lot of those things. I mean, that's the bad part about LastPass is if you are logged into it and someone gets your desktop access, guess what? They're in. It's just like it's you. In fact, they got to PayPal and Amazon, and PayPal wouldn't even refund because they hadn't hacked my PayPal account. They had come through
something else.
Yeah, well, they'd come through my account like it was me, right? It wasn't unauthorized access. They had authorized access in the sense that they were on my computer, right? And now I can't prove any of this because I don't have the logs and I can't see that, but it really does look like that's kind of what happened. Fortunately, they were pretty stupid. So they bought $600 worth of gift cards at Amazon and then bought things and returned them. And, of course, when you return it, it goes right back into your gift card account. And then I caught them. And so I shut that all off when they were still in the middle of the return process. And I lost. I didn't lose any money in that one. In fact, Amazon shut a bunch of – when I alerted Amazon of the fact, did you know you can call somebody at Amazon and they have a live person there that you can talk to?
Yes, I did. Only because my mom used it out in Utah when my knee scooter didn't arrive when it was supposed to for our trip out there.
Yeah. And so I talked to a live person, and they have a fraud department, and so they sent it there and locked some things up. All those purchases that were made, I just identified them. They locked them all up and eventually refunded all that money. Called the credit cards and said, hey, you know, this wasn't my transaction, and they locked those down and issued brand new cards. Of course, we didn't know what they had gotten to in the bank, so we changed ID numbers as well as we got new credit cards as well as, right? And right. So I'm still at zero, and nobody lost except the criminals because they weren't smart enough to actually get any of this thing done. And then they got to PayPal. They bought two $100 gift cards for at Gifts, GYFT gift.com. It's a way of buying gift cards. It's really money laundering is what it is at this gifts.com. You can pretty much with any source buy gift cards and then spend those on other things. I see it as a huge avenue for that, you know, for this kind of break-in, so to speak. But bought two Amazon, they bought Amazon gift cards, and then they were still in my account. By the way, they created an account for me at gifts.com, and they used the exact same username and password that they'd gotten into a TeamViewer. So guess what I did? I just took that account back over, changed the password.
These are the worst criminals.
I know. The worst criminals ever. Like, I was able to break into my own account.
Let's use the same one you used on the other one.
Let's use the same one. I knew it was... So I thought, you know, I wonder if they created an account over there. So I went over there and logged in with my email ID. And I thought, I'll just try the same password that they use. Well, if they're going to use my email name as a ID, guess who that comes back to when it's password reset time? It comes back to me. So and they use the same password, so I didn't even have to reset it. And then I went in and reset it. In my account was still the $100 gift cards they had bought. And so I'm like, well, thank you. I just took those numbers, went to Amazon, redeposited them, and boom.
Now you got some money in Amazon that you have
credits back in Amazon. Yeah, now that's the one drawback, right? That money went from the bank account. Now I'm probably going to, it's $200. I'm probably going to spend that money anyways at some point to go from that tech account to Amazon. It was going to happen anyways. But just a reminder for us tech guys, get your stuff locked down. I also changed, most of your banks allow you to change your actual ID. So the ID you use when you log in, I changed that as well. That might be something to change once a year anyways, just to kind of let that know. Set up. We finally got Sarah set up on LastPass, shared those IDs with her. I found out only passwords sync, user IDs don't. So you need to, I changed them and didn't let her know, and then of course she couldn't get into the bank account, and so I had to come down and fix that. I wasn't real happy about that, but it's okay. Not her fault. Totally mine. and she says thank you. She's standing right there. So be careful.
So for that two-factor on TeamViewer, are you using Google Authenticator or what app?
I am using Google
Authenticator. Okay, I was just, because I'm trying to get it set up. Because I have TeamViewer running all the time. And I have it on I have it on family's devices too, so they can get into all of my family's devices.
Yes. Lock your accounts down, people.
You kind of forget about that. You forget about TeamViewer being actually a big gateway for these people.
It could be gigantic. Yeah. It's a super gigantic attack surface.
Right.
That you need to minimize with two-factor. So get that done. I also mentioned on that same show that I wish Amazon had two-factor, and they actually do. So several of you sent me tweets and emails that said, hey, did you know, hate to be the one to tell you, Amazon has two-factor. I did not know that. And so if you have an account with two-factor, the one drawback to it is in the sharing, we share that account. And so you have to have that device to make it work. And when Sarah would want to use it, I would not be here. And so what we need to do is set up separate accounts. She already has her own. We'll just have to encourage her to use that. But we like share music and some of those. The Prime membership is on mine, and we've got some things to work out. So it's not just as easy as setting dual factor over at Amazon. I think we've got it pretty much locked down now to worry about it. But, all right, so I say all that to say Robert Davis sends in a note. He says, for best credit card security, which I this is an area I knew existed from a technology standpoint, but very, very smart to think about. He says, he says about your adventure with Amazon, they were probing the account. If you had not caught it, you would have been the proud purchaser of some deep sea fishing gear, which I wouldn't have gotten to keep, or several Alienware gaming PCs, right? So they would have bought really expensive stuff.
Right.
Although the drawback to that is shipping is very, like, buying physical devices with stolen money is not advisable, right? Because they have to be shipped somewhere.
Yes.
And criminals aren't going to do that. So they're always going to turn them into gift cards, which they have a hard time tracking, right? That's the deal. If you're going to steal credit card stuff, they're going to buy gift cards. And then those gift cards are gone for the most part. We really got to get a handle on this gift card deal, because it would thwart a lot of criminals if those gift cards would be trackable.
Right.
Many of them are not. He also says, for best credit card security, use virtual accounts. This is really cool. Like Citibank, MasterCard, and I think Bank of America use it. For online or phone purchases, right? So the virtual credit card number is tied to your vendor ID. You can set a limit and an expiration date per card. They act more like a prepaid card that you can reload anytime you want online. Then Citibank issues a new chip and PIN signed card. When Citibank issued a new chip and PIN card to him, they moved all of my active virtual cards to the new number. So you get maybe 5 or 6 virtual card numbers that you use for various vendors and assign limits to them. So that, you know, think of like, so you're going to talk about Spotify. So you could have, just for your Spotify account, what's the new Spotify and your monthly amount that you would charge on?
For a
on
family Spotify? Account, $14.99.
So maybe you give it a $15 or $16 limit, right, from that standpoint, because it's only going to charge and you're going to pay that off, right? And then if it ever goes more than that, it'll automatically decline it. From that standpoint, right? When there's a suspected or confirmed security breach at a vendor, Citibank deactivates the virtual card numbers for that vendor, and it doesn't have to issue a brand new card every time you do that, right?
That's nice.
Yeah. I mean, it seems, and I think there's probably some more details in this, and you should probably dig in at your, you know, with your credit card provider on how it exactly works. But he says this saves you the hassle of changing credit card info for the unaffected vendors, right? So if it happens on your virtual card, they just shut the virtual card off.
Right.
You don't have to get a new credit card associated with it. So one of those ways to really work the system kind of in your favor. And they'll give you, I don't know if it's 5 or 10 or 15 virtual numbers. I've seen this before, and this was big during the holiday seasons. In other words, when you do your Christmas shopping, get a virtual number for the purchases you're making during Christmas time, because that's when a lot of fraud happens.
Yeah.
You know, card numbers get out and those kinds of things. So another kind of cool technology, there's a lot more to it. Robert, thank you for that email, by the way. There's a lot more to it than that. But a way of kind of, and I appreciate you guys looking out for me from that standpoint, of using technology in your favor, especially in the banking area, to make that a little bit better. That can be really important in some of those areas of, you know, of automatic payments or things that are going on where you know that number may be in a high attack environment. I mean, LinkedIn, right, in this case, just got hacked. And
right.
While we don't have credit card numbers for the most part at LinkedIn, you know, there are some places where they might store your credit card. And you know, if you can give those vendors your virtual number, it's a lot easier to shut that down than it is your real number. And if they get a hold of that number and you have low limits, like, Mike, some of my cards have some ridiculous limits, you know? And you're like, man, they could just go,
wild with that thing.
Yeah. And they're getting really good at finding fraud. I mean, they detect fraud now on these cards. I'm amazed at how quick they catch fraud when it starts happening. And the last couple times it's happened to me, they've caught it on the second or third transaction. And they're like, hey, we suspect fraud. So they're getting better at it, too. They're liable for some of this. That's probably why they're getting better at it. We never want to transfer all that liability to us, because then they have no motive, right? They got to spend tons of money on fraud detection.
Right, you know? Right. But and I kind of like, I mean, my just generic just first line of defense is on the app now, especially through Amex. It was a new feature, and I actually had the feature from Apple Pay before I even had it in the app, was just getting a notification for every single transaction that happens on your card. Because you'll notice, they do get a little annoying sometimes, especially if you have a connected account with a spouse or a family member or something like that. But if you're getting a notification every time your card swiped, you know, you kind of expect it. When I walk out of the store, I expect to see that notification when I just use my card. And now I've also, if you see one, I'm like, Hannah, did you go to whatever? And it's not a thing of like, and she understands that she gets the notifications too, so we both know where the card's going. But it's a nice little feature where if something popped up on there, I did not just spend $20 here or $20 there. And it'll do it. That way, and it pulls in from all Amazon, anything. I get, and it says Spotify, $15, you know, every month it pops up there. So then you would be notified every time, although it wouldn't help the gift card scenario.
But, yeah, but I would have seen a $100 gift card purchase come
through.
That's
true. And
I would have said, nobody's buying it. I mean, that's an odd amount. They're also looking for that, by the way, because they're buying gift cards in these even amounts. So they look for that. Hey, someone's buying a $100 gift card. That pops up on the radar here pretty quick for most credit card companies now. Not that they should buy $123 gift cards, but that might be a little smarter.
Yeah.
You know, although, who really buys a gift card for $123? Again, the gift card industry needs to be reformed in some way so we can track these things. If we would fix that, we'd have a lot less problems. We had a card lifted at right out of Office Depot. Somehow they got a hold of it and were charging the next day. And, of course, it was gift cards, right? And they actually caught the people, which was kind of cool. They were able to add camera and some other stuff, and they were able to catch them. So, anyways, something to watch for. Thanks. I got a lot of feedback on that story, Mike, when we talked about it. And I didn't talk about it for very long, but a lot of feedback. There's a lot of ways for you to be secure and to stay secure and to use technology to get it done. And so I appreciate you guys' feedback on that as well. Mike, you mentioned Spotify, the family plan. Are there new plans out there? Is that brand new?
There are. So there's always been a family plan, but the way the family plan works was you pay an X amount, and then for each family member you add on up to 5 members, they come in at a discounted rate. So Spotify Premium for an individual user is $9.99 a month, and so this was like, okay, maybe for every new family member it was like $5 a month, but they just revamped it, which is kind of nice. So you plus 5 other people, so 6 total accounts for $14.99 a month, which is, for me, just I couldn't believe it was that low. I mean, that's the second count is half off, and then all the rest of them are free pretty much after that. Yeah. So if you have family members, all of a sudden I was like, hey, Sister Olivia, you want an account? Yeah, you want? I felt like Oprah. I was just handing out Spotify accounts. I was like, you want an account, and you want Spotify Premium. But it was kind of nice. Yeah, so I had five spots to fill up because I was already paying for it for Hannah and me because it was already cheaper. And I'm like, well, shoot, now I can add four other people.
That'd be a good Collison family plan, to be honest with you, with seven of us. You know, that would get six of us on the plan, and we could use it. We're using Prime Music, so that works as well. Although I think Spotify has more music than Prime.
They do. Oh, a ton. Yeah. Spotify is like, it's close to iTunes. It's close enough to iTunes for me. It has pretty much everything I ever want.
Yeah. I was DJing a party last year, and I used Prime, and I just said, play a 90s Prime playlist, good enough, like for what, for that kind of outdoor atmosphere where people aren't really listening to the music, just to have some stuff kind of going on. That works out pretty well. It's spotty with some of the bands. It's got some things, but not others. It's like it's tough to get AC/DC and some of those bands that.
Now, is there a social aspect to Prime? Like for Spotify, for me, I love having the friends. They create playlists. I can grab their playlist. My sister makes awesome playlists of all the stuff she does, like study playlists and stuff, and I'm always grabbing hers, and it's kind of nice. That's what I love, the social aspect about Spotify, and also the curated playlist that Spotify creates, but I love the social aspect.
Yeah, no social aspect on Prime. Okay. Just, you can just say, you know, to Echo, you can just say, hey, play, you know, I think tonight I said Little River Band or something like that, and boom. It was, but you never really know. I tried AC/DC, not on AC/DC, so unfortunately there are some bands that you just can't get, and you think, oh, darn it, but good enough. I mean, it's, like I said, for those events where you just want some music playing in the background.
Now you've got me wondering if AC/DC is on Spotify. I'm going to check.
I bet they are. I'm going to say they are. I don't. For some reason lately, I've been that song, you know, Thunder from AC/DC.
Oh, yeah. That was my high school like theme song, because we were the Thunder.
I cannot get it out of my head.
Yes, they are.
I'm sure they are. Yeah. Sure they are. They brokered a ton of deals. So cool. Well, I think we got through, Mike. I think we got through
things that we can keep going for like two more hours. Like, cut us off, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, here's the podcasting bartender that says no more podcast.
No, that's right. And the Blab experiment kind of worked. I think maybe we'll do this. You know, I only got 12 people to come and watch. And I think people jump in and see that it's just a broadcast and kind of go, and then I put our link to join us live, and so some people probably came over from, you know, maybe they started there and came over. I wouldn't anticipate it would be a huge deal, but interesting nonetheless. We got it up and running on Blab.
It was crystal clear. It looked great.
Yeah, no, this implementation of it's pretty good.
Right.
In theory, if you're listening to it, nobody is. I don't have anybody watching it on Blab right now. It's just me. But in theory, did Emily join us out here too? I see her.
Yes,
out there.
Emily, she was out here.
Thanks for joining us last week. But you could have both chat rooms going at the same time, and it would work. It would work pretty well. So remind everyone that one, if you're purchasing on Amazon, we mentioned a little bit earlier, head out to theaverageguy.tv/Amazon, and many of you do appreciate that. Kind of funds the network and helps us do what we need to do. Plus, if you want to get something on the Average Guy Tech Scholarship Fund to give it a try. And by the way, Mike, we never got those Kangaroo Pros. I never got that.
Oh, it didn't come in?
No.
I should reach back out to them because they asked me. I mean, it was recently that they said, oh, yeah, we'll ship it to Jim instead of you.
I think they're getting hammered. Yeah. I don't blame them. It's some work so to get it out. But theaverageguy.tv/Amazon is the way to do it, and we appreciate it when you purchase doing it. That way, we want to thank Roger over at WLMN Radio for him broadcasting us live, terrestrial over in Grafton, West Virginia. So we appreciate that. Want to say thanks to Ken out in the chat room, wishing me a happy birthday. It's been a great, Mike. People said, so you doing something special tonight? I said, I'm podcasting.
Hanging out with my best friend, Mike.
Hanging out with my best friends. I get some podcasts in. So I couldn't think of anything better. I tried to think, this is our sixth year. So we're in our sixth year here on Home Gadget Geeks, which used to be called Home Tech back in the day. And you would think in 6 years I've hit my birthday before. You know?
You haven't?
No, I'm just trying to think. I can't remember it being a big deal, but I think in 6 years I've hit it once before, somewhere in there. So I think I podcasted on my birthday. Not a big deal. I'd like to hang out with you guys. So good to be out here. Thanks for all the birthday wishes. the big deal right now is Facebook just blows up on your birthday.
Yes.
Right? Just blows up. It's good though. It really does help me reminds me of like when your birthday is coming up or when Mike Howard or Dave McCabe or those guys that I hang out with. It's always good. And yeah, is it enough, Mike? Here's the question. We're all guys here except Emily. She's still hanging out there. So Emily, you can put in the chat room if this is different. But for us guys, is a Facebook happy birthday enough, Mike? Is it enough if someone just says happy birthday, Mike? Is that okay?
I'll be honest. I made a declaration 2 years ago, 3 years ago, that I was never going to post happy birthday on Facebook to anyone, not a single person. Because I was like, the people that I know enough to say happy birthday to, I'll text them, call them, or I'll see them in person. Everyone else, if I see you, I'm going to wish you happy birthday. And I love the notifications, but because if I start doing on some and I don't do others, I feel like it's an everyday thing. And then how do you make who's important enough to get a wish and who's not? So I have actually never done it. I will text people, call them, see them in person. But other than that, I don't do the Facebook birthday thing. I appreciate all the birthday wishes on Facebook, but I don't personally write them.
Wow, that's interesting.
I expected this year to get zero. I'm like, people are going to notice that I have not written a single happy birthday and I can do it back. No, but no, people do. Yeah.
No. Facebook could even be...
I'm the wrong person to talk to.
Fill that in. Like, it could just say happy birthday, Mike.
Kind of like the congratulations on LinkedIn. The messages that come to you say, congrats, hope all is well, !
Yeah, they're all robots.
Yeah.
Right, they're just people hitting one button.
Right.
And
do you want to congratulate them? Sure. Do you want to say happy birthday?
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, so Other Jim says, should we buy you a gift card? And that's pretty funny, considering what we just talked about. So
don't worry, I'll use your account to buy it, Jim. You're going to buy yourself a birthday gift from me.
Mike Howard says, are you saying my happy birthday wasn't enough? Did you expect me to send you a Drobo or something? Absolutely, you could send me a Drobo. Drobo's back, baby. They are back. But no, I didn't expect that. And I always appreciate your happy birthday notes that are out there. It's just one of those things I was wondering, is that so easy to do, Mike? Is that, how does that fit into the social? Is that appropriate for a birthday? Yeah. I was super lucky at work. Oh, I didn't say this early. I was going to say this early in the podcast. I'll have to tell these guys. They have to listen to the end. So today they got me, they baked me raspberry pie. So that's what we had instead of cake.
I saw your post and I was like, that is awesome. What an awesome get.
So Melanie, who's one of my interns, said I've been waiting a year to use this joke. That's because awesome. We had your raspberry pie at work with those interns last summer. Mm. And we did some cool stuff with the raspberry pie instead of 3D printers and a whole bunch of fun stuff with it. And my birthday is always early in the cycle, like the first week or two of their internship. And they don't know, they don't know it's coming up, and then it appears on them. And they baked me a really nice big chocolate chip cookie last year. But Melanie had been waiting all year to make for me raspberry pies. And so if you look on a Facebook page, we have two raspberry pies with whipped cream. They were actually really delicious. And she even told me she baked a test one just to make sure it was going to be good.
That is commitment to the joke.
I have the best.
I noticed you guys had fun with your raspberry pies because mine came back with googly eyes.
Oh, yeah. You did get the googly eyes.
Yeah.
Yes. The googly eyes appeared on everything at the end of the year last year. I had them all over my office. Anything I had that had eyes on it, including pictures of my children, had googly eyes on the. They must have gotten a
bag of them or something.
Like a sheet.
Yeah.
And they went through my office putting googly eyes. I'm not going to lie. I got the best interns in the whole city of Omaha and maybe in the whole Midwest. Just a great group of kids that come in, work for us during the summer, and we are able to do multiple year interns, which is great. So many of my interns are back for their second or third. I have four that are back for their third summer.
Wow.
And we're really getting them some significant work, which is pretty cool. So I appreciated the raspberry pie that was baked for me. I think that was baked, and it was delicious. But we had, right before that, my other team celebrated, and they got me what I'm calling crack cake. And it was like fudge and then chocolate and then some kind of cream, and that was really good, and then more chocolate. I mean,
sounds really good.
I could feel my heart rate go up when I did this. It was pure.
Just looking at it, and you're like,
pure crack. Yeah, it was pure crack. And I just couldn't stop eating it. It was so good, and it was so chocolatey and so
delicious.
You're
getting the itches right now just thinking about it, you know?
I am. I'm getting a little shaky.
Right.
Getting a little shaky right here.
Get the man's cake.
Did they eat all the crack cake? Maybe I'll go back to work. I'm going to go back to work and check if they made the crack cake. So they, it was super delicious, and so it was one of these days that, that's what's great about your birthday, and everyone's like, don't worry about it, and then Sarah brought home Buffalo Wild Wings for dinner, which is just my favorite.
I love Buffalo Wild Wings, too. I'm a huge, I love it.
Yeah, we, you and me, we need to go out and crush some wings.
We do.
Sometime. Yeah, beer and wings, it's nothing better than watching the Huskers win. To beer and wings.
Yes.
Yeah, right on. Yep. So, we will remind you as well that you can also listen to Home Gadget Geeks on our mobile app, so head out to homegadgetgeeks.com. We want to thank Christian over at Maple Grove Partners for hosting us as well, high-speed hosting from people you know and trust, and super secure, by the way. I don't think I've told Christian this complete story yet. He'll be very embarrassed that I let someone come in through my team.
Your team,
yeah, he'd be pretty embarrassed. So, that would never happen to him. Head out to, and by the way, a good safety feature, log out of LastPass at night before you go to bed. Just log out. That way if something happens and somebody does get in, they can't get your LastPass because they would need that master password to get in, and they would not have keys to the whole kingdom to get that done. So make sure you last. That's kind of a habit I'm trying to get into, is just log out of LastPass. When I'm done, before I go to bed, log out of it and be done. But again, if you want that secure, high-speed hosting, head out to Maple Grove Partners. All one word, MapleGrovePartners.com. Well, Mike, we made it through a show, just the two of us. Pretty awesome, pretty fun. Next week, Dwayne Robinson from Microsoft is going to be here to join us. And Dwayne's got some things we're trying to – he just moved and has done a ton of home automation. And he has a whole bunch of stuff he wants to talk about. And Dwayne can take one subject, we can go the whole hour. And he's super thorough. So it's going to be a treat next week to have Dwayne on here. And he'll be here to join us, and then we'll be lining up some great shows for you here in the future. We are live every Thursday, 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern, at theaverageguy.tv/live, as well as Blab. This is kind of working. So if you're on Blab, well, not many are there. We had 13 show up on Blab tonight. That's kind of interesting. We'll have about that many in Spreaker as well, if you're listening to this live on Spreaker. We're out here, 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern, at theaverageguy.tv/live. We do it every single week, and with that, we'll say goodbye, everybody.